Well, hello. Welcome to this episode of Three Things. It's me here, your happy-go-lucky host of the show, Jenna. I'm so happy you've dropped in today. As I push rando buttons, the computer tells me it is May 29th, so I shall plant accordingly. Actually, I won't, though. I'm rather more of a seat-of-the-pants flyer, and I like it that way. So for today, I came across some crazy shit that goes down in the ocean, a little stuff about a big puff, and even some little fluffy feeling things that humans are doing that I'd like to share. So I'ma do that, alright, a now. As I said on a prior show, I feel the need to advocate for the lovely green earth friend, with whom I have a long and storied history, and that's just what I'ma do right now, in the form this week of just some rando facts about your friend and mine, cannabis. Did you know that only the female cannabis plant has the right stuff to get you that buzz? Only the females produce the potent buds high in THC, that's tetrahydrocannabinol, the psychoactive compound that gets one high. Male plants don't make buds at all and only produce small amounts of THC. I am woman, hear me roar. Or giggle goofily in a corner somewhere. Did you know that the brain cells that are turned on by hitting some Weedlies are the same ones that chocolate turns on? In some lucky little experimental lab mice, eating chocolate, drinking cocoa, and smoking pot all resulted in a certain part of the brain increasing dopamine levels. That's the brain chemical that makes you feel good. This according to Dr. Laura Giuliano of American University and others of her colleagues at Scripps Research Institute. More, those effects were even bigger than the effects caused by morphine and another friend of mine, caffeine, and the effect lasted longer than when those little Mises were given cocaine. How the fuck do they afford that? And where do they get it? Huh? So William Shakespeare was apparently at least a light stonerhead, pot-smoky sort of fellow. In his garden at his home in Stratford-upon-Avon, 24 pipes were found, and someone thought to test the goobies left in the bowls, and they found cannabis in 8 of them. Now I know why I like reading his works. Same, bro. Same. And now, thing number one today. There was once a female killer whale, or orca, designated K-16, but I'ma call her Janine, who had a son, designated K-35, who I'ma call Stevie. Janine and Stevie had a great relationship, and always hung out together, and were besties. A guy named Michael Weiss noticed their close relationship and started watching them, and realized that they shared food, which is not really the norm in orcapods. Male orcas are big, big animals, and they need to eat a lot of food, but they're so large it's hard to maneuver to hunt. Janine must get this because oftentimes she does all the work, diving down, catching a salmon, bringing it up to the top of the waves, and biting her catch in half, in easy reach of big little Stevie. This seems sweet and caring if you're into that whole anthropomorphizing scene, but it's really not very good at all. Janine hasn't had another calf since little big Stevie was born. She should have had at least 2 to 4 offspring in all that time. She's just far too busy feeding her son to go out and party and hook up with some handsome guy and have another Bible. Thing is, It's not just Janine who is sacrificing among the southern resident killer whales in the Pacific Northwest. For some reason, the moms in this community unit, when they have a son, feed him and spend their time on him and pay the cost of their own reproductive lives to keep those sons fed, wasting away their chances to bear new offspring until they're too old to feed themselves, much less those big-ass sons, and then they die. Often these huge sons don't usually live long once their mother perishes, probably because they're hungrier than when mom was doing all the cooking. It's thought that mothers do this so that they get big, strong, healthy male sons to carry on the genetic line, but the females are sacrificing their breeding years to raise these sons to be strong fathers, but there are fewer animals, both male and female. It's quite the conundrum. In South Africa, the beaches can be a grisly place, like after a couple of male orca named Port and Starboard for the way their pectoral fins flop, eat a few sharks. Well, not the whole shark, just the tasty, nutritious, oily livers. These two capricious boys have even killed a whopping 17 sharks in one sitting, as it were. One particular kill included 16 broad-nosed seven-gill sharks and one spotted gully shark. That's not even the most daring hunt these two guys did. They actually have been captured on cameras, both on helicopter and with a drone, chasing and killing a great white shark, which exhibited the flight response, which was an interesting surprise. Other sharks must have got the memo, because this has all led to a dearth of great whites in waters where they were once very prominent. It isn't known exactly where these two orca came from, but wherever it is, they appear to have been taught to hunt animals other than their usual prey. And we know that orca teach each other orca stuff now. 4 of the orca involved in the hunt, caught on camera, were not known to have attacked great white sharks before, but they do now. It makes one wonder just what sort of culture orca have that we humans just don't quite understand yet. So these orca here lately, huh? Not only are some orca moms screwing their families out of a future by feeding their big sons, and other orcas' sons are out there scaring the shit out of and then eating the livers of great white sharks, but the damn things are now attacking boats over in European waters. More, they are, it seems, teaching others to do it, if not intentionally, then just by example. Orca experts think that perhaps this whole boaty attacky thingy got started when a female orca, called White Gladys, suffered what they are calling a critical moment of agony, perhaps entrapment in an illegal fishing line or a collision with a boat, and that incident triggered this behavioral change in Gladys. It scared her and or pissed her off, right? Can you blame her? Because I can't. Now orcas have attacked hundreds of boats in the last few years, mostly sailboats, usually beginning with orcas approaching from the stern to strike the rudder, and then going on to bash at the hulls. And they've even sunk a few boats off of the Iberian coast. The reports of interactions have been continuous since 2020 in places where orcas are found, either in Galicia or in the Strait, said Alfredo López Fernández, a biologist at the University of Aveiro in Portugal, and representative of the Grupo de Trabajo Orca Atlántica, or Atlantic Orca Working Group. The orcas are doing this on purpose, of course. We don't know the origin or motivation, but defensive behavior based on trauma, as the origin of all this, gains more strength for us every day, López Fernández said. Others believe that the strange behavior might just also be a fad, like Tide Pods, but less stupid. Picked up by the curious and playful animals, I mean, it makes sense, because they are pretty much just big, pretty dolphins. Either way, these incidents are dangerous for both sides, human and orca, but especially the orca, as the Iberian subpopulation is already a red-listed population. In the last count, there were just 39 Iberian orcas. I'm more worried about the endangered orca than I am the humans and their boats, however much it must suck at this point. Let's hope it is a fad among these magnificent creatures, and that they stop risking injuring themselves like this. Boats can be recovered or fixed, or even scuttled, but you can't just pop out a new killer whale.
Say, kids, what's real bad for you, but tastes real good?
Sugar!
And what gives you the excess energy to drive Mom crazy?
Sugar!
So, what breakfast cereal will you tell Mom to buy next time she goes shopping?
Sugar Shockers! Yay!
Sugar Shockers! New super sugar-coated Sugar Shockers are little bits of raw cane drenched in honey and coated with powdered sugar, glucose, fructose, corn syrup, and other natural sweeteners.
And taste this!
Right, because there's no yucky vitamins or minerals to spoil your fun.
Yeah!
And how does it make you feel?
Like I'm vibrating.
Mommy, let's watch cartoons.
Mommy, let's go get ice cream.
Mommy, let's play Mommy.
And moms will love Sugar Shockers, too, because inside every box, there's a free bottle of new Flintstones chewable Valium.
Yeah!
So try new super sugar-coated Sugar Shockers from your friends at Irresponsible Foods.
So the time for guessing the first two mystery sounds is near done, y'all. While I've had some great guesses on both sounds, I've had no correct guesses. I love it. Show after next, I will reveal the first mystery sound. Here it is. And the show after that, I will tell y'all what this sound is. And I stand ready to eat my hat if someone guesses either sound, most especially the first one. You can comment on whichever platform you listen from. Leave a comment on the homepage of the show, that's 3things.podomatic.com, the number 3, the word things.podomatic.com, or you can email me, your happy host Jenna, at 3thingspod@gmail.com, that's the number 3, the word thingspod@gmail.com. Imagine being a bird, just flying along, following your instinctual imperative to migrate to your happy breeding grounds, when, bam, you fly right into a big old building, break your little birdie face, slide down the building, and die before you get home. Pretty awful scenario, right? Well, it happens a lot. But some human-filled light pollution-creating cities are trying to make the migration routes of several types of birds that use the Mississippi Flyway, which runs alongside the Mississippi River, a much safer trip. The Gateway Arch stands along that flyway and can be quite the hazard for a passing bird, or a bunch of them, with the lights used to illuminate it at night so it looks pretty, I guess. This is where I kind of lose it, on electricity waste, because yeah, buildings and art installations and bridges do look all spectacular all lit up at night, but most visits to those places happen during the day and don't need the lights on, And if you just gotta have lights on structures, other than for actual safety reasons, they could at very least be turned off at like, I don't know, a reasonable hour? Credit where due, I suppose. It has been usual for the past decade or so to turn off the lights on the arch for a couple of weeks in May and in September to help birds get through the region more safely. This year, however, the lights were off for all of May and will be off again in September, and more cities are turning off their lights during migration months in order to help out our little birdie buddies, and that's a great thing. I hope it helps. Now imagine rowing down a biologically dead and defunct river, now missing hundreds of species of flora and fauna, where the river was once teeming with all manner of life. How sad and depressing a thing would that be? Well, that has been the state of the once glorious Thames River in England. It was sad, but baby, now it's bouncing beautifully back. There are now somewhere around 100 to 115 or so species of fish populating the river again, and that provides food for 3 species of sharks, including starry smooth hound sharks, topi sharks, and spur dog sharks. Eels and seahorses have also returned to the Thames. Over the last 60 years, efforts have been ongoing to restore the state of the river from a polluted and sewage-filled mess to as close to its former glory as possible, and they're getting there. With the tidal and estuarine ecosystem work going on since 2003, one of the ways to see the progress is to count the top predators in the system, harbor seals and gray seals. And their numbers are steadily increasing despite competition from those sharks now living in the river again. Birds are also returning to the Thames due to the cleanup, as well as the presence of migratory and native bird sanctuaries. The most important move in this fight to realive the Thames is a planned super sewer, which will divert almost all of the sewage away from the waterway, making the river a much more healthy environment for wildlife to not only survive, but to flourish. Now try to imagine being a proud American bison stampeding across the wild and windy plains because you've got a whiff of freedom up your snoot and just felt like running. Then being hunted down from your millions and millions to a mere 300 animals. Then hundreds of years pass and you get to roam again, mostly safe and protected, unless some uneducated asshole with a gun takes you out. And then you come to a wide river you just can't cross. Now what do you fucking do? Luckily, some humans have a plan for you. They are going to take an old defunct bridge across the mighty Mississippi River, fancy it up, and turn it into a bridge for you. You lucky bison, you. Of course, humans being how they are, they'll get something out of this deal as well, or else it would never be funded. This bridge would be the longest wildlife crossing on the planet and would be comprised of a strip of enclosed prairie across it, dotted with viewing stations for people to watch you, dear bison, do your bison thing. Preliminary artist renderings show glass guardrails and fancy cafes and unobstructed view of the animals, and don't forget the lovely and mighty Mississippi River. I hope it comes to fruition. Bison deserve it. And also, they're not only really cool looking, they're a piece of living history. And did you know there used to be bison in Europe? I don't think I knew that. I'm happy to know it now though, because a few relatives of the American bison, that would be the European wood bison, no, they're not made of wood, were released into an ancient forest in Kent, England, to do their bison thing there. They haven't been there for some 6,000 years, and it's about time they came back. There are 5 of those magnificent beasts living on 123 acres, that's 50 hectares, after 2 long years of preparation. The bison are now pretty much self-sufficient, finding their own shelter, water, and food clearing undergrowth, spreading seeds, debarking trees that don't belong so native trees can flourish, making forest highways for all the little creatures, foxes and bunnies and stoats, oh my, lumbering and chewing, and just being big old bison. And I am super happy for them. Oh, and also, subscribe. And now it's time for the GWOD, Grandiloquent Word of the Day. Today, that word begins with the letter E. The word is emunction. It is spelled E-M-U-N-C-T-I-O-N, and it is pronounced E-munk-shun. From the Latin emunctus, past participle of emungo, to blow one's nose, it is the act of removing obstructions from, or cleaning, bodily passages, such as picking one's nose. I can use it in a sentence, and so I shall. And it's going to be a bit alliterative because I do the alliterative thing in the most lovingest memory for my Samantha, who took alliteration to the next level. So do bear with, if not enjoy, the alliterative nature of the guads, yeah? Drum roll, please. I endured my egregious enoclophobia and enjoyed the zoo, except I experienced emetophobia when the gorgeous glassed-in gorilla enacted an execrable emunction and glued his snotty goblins to the glass. So that was a pretty fun sentence. And yes, the gorilla was magnificent. His snot goblins, not so much. At least he's an animal behind the glass, and not some guy in a car at a stoplight performing his own egregious emunction. 'Cause gross.
Everybody lives on a street, in a city or a village or a town for what it's worth. And they're all inside a country which is part of a continent that sits upon a planet known as Earth. And the Earth is a ball full of oceans and some mountains which is out there spinning silently in space. And living on that Earth are the plants and the animals and also the entire human race. It's a great big universe and we're all really puny. We're just tiny little specks about the size of Mickey Rooney. It's big and black and icky and we are small and dinky. It's a big universe and we're not. And we're part of a vast interplanetary system stretching 700 billion miles long. With 9 planets and a sun, we think the Earth's the only one that has life on it, although we could be wrong. Across the interstellar voids are a billion asteroids, including meteors and Halley's Comet, too. And there's over 50 moons floating out there like balloons in a panoramic trillion-mile view. And still it's all a speck amid 100 billion stars in a galaxy we call the Milky Way. It's 60,000 trillion miles from one end to the other, and still that's just a fraction of the way. 'Cause there's 100 billion galaxies that stretch across the sky, filled with constellations, planets, moons, and stars. And still the universe extends to a place that never ends, which is maybe just inside a little jar. It's a great big universe, and we're all really puny. We're just tiny little specks about the size of Mickey Rooney. Though we don't know how we got here, we're important pioneers. It's a big universe.
And now it is time for the TIDIH, that's T-D-I-H, this day in history, and that's May the 29th. A few super interesting people came into being on May 29th. A few interesting others shed their mortal coils, and some awfully cool stuff happened as well. Let me tell you about them. On this day in 1953, Edmund Hillary and Tenzing Norgay summited 29,032-foot Mount Everest, becoming the first climbers to do so where many others had tried and failed. A great man born on this day in London in the year 1903 was the amazing, the hilarious, the wonderful, the consummate entertainer, Leslie Towns Hope, better known as Bob Hope, king of the one-liners. This man was a real humanitarian. Between 1941 and 1991, he made 57 tours with the USO, that's the United Service Organizations, traveling the world to entertain the troops until he was a big ol' age. The United States Congress even passed a bill making Mr. Hope an honorary veteran of the U.S. Armed Forces. He helped establish modern stand-up comedy in America, and he was the first to use cue cards. Mr. Hope retired from public life in 1998 at 95 years old and died at the age of 100 in 2003. Hey, thanks for all the laughs, Bob. John F. Kennedy was also born on May 29th, in 1917, in Brookline, Massachusetts. He was barely past his first 1,000 days in office when he was assassinated in Dallas, Texas, in November 1963. JFK was not only the youngest man ever elected president, he was also the youngest sitting president to die. A couple of really, really super funny men died on May 29th. Harvey Herschel Corman, huge talent and complete gigglebox on The Carol Burnett Show for a decade, and Gavin McLeod, who played Murray on The Mary Tyler Moore Show, and Meryl Streep, the captain of the Love Boat. He also played Moriarty in the movie Kelly's Heroes. It's a great film. You should look it up. In 1453, the capital of the Eastern Roman Empire, Constantinople, fell to the Turks, led by Mehmed II, ending the Byzantine Empire. 1592, May 29, Battle of Sacheon, during which the Korean Navy, led by Admiral Yi Sun-shin, repelled a Japanese fleet using a Korean turtle ship, so named because of its protective covering of the decks, which mimicked a turtle's shell. In 1733, the right of Canadians to keep Indian slaves was upheld in Quebec City. It was May 29, 1849, when Abraham Lincoln said, "You can fool some of the people all of the time, and all of the people some of the time, but you cannot fool all of the people all of the time." Can you not, though? In 1851, on May 29th, Sojourner Truth, one of the world's best-known human rights crusaders, addressed the first black women's rights convention in Akron, Ohio. Truth continued her crusade throughout her life, even earning an audience with President Abraham Lincoln. 1912 saw 15 young women fired by Curtis Publishing in Philadelphia for doing the turkey trot dance at lunch break. Now that's some bullshit right there. Dance. Always dance. In 1914, a Norwegian coal freighter called the Storstad and the ocean liner RMS Empress of Ireland crashed on the St. Lawrence River in thick fog, tragically killing 1,012 of the 1,477 persons aboard. Charles Streit filed for a patent for the automatic pop-up toaster in 1919 on May 29th, and I, for one, am super-duper glad that he did. I could live on peanut butter toast. In 1928, Fritz von Opel reached an amazing 200 kilometers per hour, or 124 miles per hour, in an experimental rocket-powered car. Such an accomplishment way back then But I can do that in my Jeep right now. Right now. Let's go. Let's go. Oh, sorry. I get carried away. I like to go fastly. 1973 saw Thomas Bradley elected as the first African-American mayor of Los Angeles, California. In 1987, Michael Jackson, apparently completely obsessed with them, attempted to buy the Elephant Man's remains. But why though? The Hunga Tonga eruption in January of 2022 was the most powerful volcanic explosion to have shaken the earth since Mount Pinatubo in the Philippines in 1991, and before that, Krakatau in the Java Sea in 1883. The blast could be heard at a distance of over 6,000 miles or 10,000 kilometers, and the pressure wave it generated circled the planet 4 times. It also triggered stronger than hurricane winds in the highest layer of Earth's atmosphere, challenging scientists' understanding of the influence our planet has on outer space. The eruption generated shock waves that reached as high as the planet's ionosphere, the outermost layer of the atmosphere, and at altitudes of up to 400 miles, that's 650 kilometers, and triggered winds with staggering speeds of up to 450 miles per hour, or 720 kilometers per hour, that were measurable by satellites at altitudes of up to 120 miles, or 190 kilometers. That's way above the Kármán line at the altitude of 62 miles, or 100 kilometers, at the very edge of space. No one expected that the disturbances caused by the eruptions would be more powerful than recently measured geomagnetic storms, but they were, as measured by ICON, or the Ionospheric Connection Explorer. More, there is an electric current that circles the ionosphere at Earth's equator called the Equatorial Electrojet, which went haywire, even flipping direction and surging to many times its usual strength in the days following the eruption of Hunga Tonga. Jim Spann, lead space weather guy at NASA's Heliophysics Division, said that these results are an exciting look at how events on Earth can affect weather in space, in addition to space weather affecting Earth. When it blew, the Southern Pacific volcano, located near the 169 island chain of the Kingdom of Tonga, generated the highest volcanic plume ever recorded. That's 57 kilometers or 35 miles high, and triggered tsunamis as distant as the Caribbean Sea, and created plasma bubbles. A surprising discovery is that ionospheric fluctuations begin anywhere from a few minutes to a few hours before the atmospheric pressure waves involved in creating plasma bubbles. This means that it could be possible to predict and warn ships and planes of interference to satellite communications and GPS signals so they won't be in the middle of nowhere and lose communication and/or guidance. These measurements and experiments made and lessons learned here on Earth, of course, will be applied in the exploration of other worlds. When the volcano erupted, it not only sent a tsunami racing around the world and set off a sonic boom that circled the globe twice, and sound waves that circled the Earth 4 times, it also blasted an enormous plume of water vapor, enough to fill over 58,000 Olympic-sized pools into Earth's stratosphere. That's between around 12 and 53 kilometers, or 8 and 33 miles, up. While most volcanic eruptions rarely inject much, if any, water into the stratosphere, Hunga Tonga did, to the nth degree. The excess water vapor injected by the Tonga volcano could remain in the stratosphere for several years. This is salient because water vapor doesn't reflect sunlight, as particulates do, and possibly means a bit of a jump on the global thermometer. Like we need that right now.
If you love to smoke, then you know there's no place left in America where you can light up a butt these days. That's why Carnival is proud to offer our new Smoker's Cruise. You'll board our luxury liner and be off to, who cares where you go? The point is, you'll be in international waters where you can smoke 24 hours a day for a full 2 weeks.
They let us smoke on the dance floor, at all our meals, even in the pool.
I like all the activities. Smoke-alongs, cigar races. Hey, I met a babe who smokes unfiltered Luckies.
The Smoker's Crew. Sign up now for regular or menthol. Hey, it's not just a vacation. It's the lung boat.
It's my friend. Could be me. Now.
So that's it for today. My quota of 3 things has been met. Just gotta call the boss and tell him to fuck off. I'm done. Wait a minute. I'm the boss, and I do what I want. So what I want to do is this. I would like to thank you all for joining me today, and I hope you found something of value, or a smile, or a laugh, because at least one, if not all of those things, are the goal. I would also love to thank my new subscribers and followers. Thank you. And I would love to invite you all back, luscious listeners, to spend a little time with me, your haphazard host, Jenna, next week. If you have guesses on the mystery sound, or just wish to tell me a little something-something, or feel the need to leave a comment, you can do so quite easily. Email me, Jenna, at 3thingspod@gmail.com. That's the number 3, the word thingspod@gmail.com. Leave a comment on whichever app or platform you listen on, or comment on the homepage of the show, 3things.podomatic.com. That's the number 3, the word things.podomatic.com. I read and appreciate them all. You can even help support the show by buying me, Jenna, a cuppa. You can do that by visiting ko-fi.com/3things. Again, the number 3, the word things. And now is the time for the biggest ask of the show, but it's an easy ask. I just ask that you, precious person, find your pretty peepers and something reflecty, and tell yourself that you are good, decent, and kind, and worthy of forgiveness, especially if you are mostly nice, or at least own your shit. So go ahead and forgive yourself, and be happy. Good day, y'all.